So today, as today is the auspicious day of Diwali, I've chosen a special verse from the ninth canto, where the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra are described in some detail in two or three chapters. So hopefully on the board we have text 50. So we'll start off with that, then I'll also discuss some of the pastimes leading up to this point, which is the real sort of celebration that we mark today as Diwali. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Being pleased by the full surrender and submission of Lord Bharat, Lord Ramachandra then accepted the throne of the state. He cared for the citizens exactly like a father, and the citizens, being fully engaged in their occupational duties of Varna and Ashram, accepted him as their father. Purport. People are very fond of the pattern of Ram Rajya, and even today politicians sometimes form a party called Ram Rajya, but unfortunately they have no obedience to Lord Ram. It is sometimes said that people want the kingdom of God without God. Such an aspiration, however, is never to be fulfilled. Good government can exist when the relationship between the citizens and the government is like that exemplified by Lord Ramachandra and his citizens. Lord Ramachandra ruled his kingdom exactly as a father takes care of his children, and the citizens, being obliged to the good government of Lord Ramachandra, accepted the Lord as their father. Thus the relationship between the citizens and the government should be exactly like that between father and son. When the sons in a family are well trained, they are obedient to the father and mother, and when the father is well qualified, he takes good care of the children. As indicated here by the word Swadharma Nirata Varnashrama Gunanvitaha, the people were good citizens because they accepted the institution of Varna and Ashram, which arranges society in the Varna divisions of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, and the Ashram divisions of Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. This is actual human civilization. People must be trained according to the different Varnashram occupational duties. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Chatur Varanyam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashah. The four Varanas must be established according to varying qualities and work. The first principle for good government is that it must institute this Varanashram system. The purpose of Varanashram is to enable people to become God conscious. Varnashrama Chara Vata Purushena Parapuman Vishnur Aradhyate. The entire Varnashram scheme is intended to enable people to become Vaishnavas, Vishnur Asya Devata. When people worship Lord Vishnu as the Supreme Lord, they become Vaishnavas. Thus people should be trained to become Vaishnavas through the system of Varna and Ashram, as they were during the reign of Lord Ramachandra, when everyone was fully trained to follow the Varnashram principles. Simply enforcing laws and ordinances cannot make the citizens obedient and lawful. That is impossible. Throughout the entire world there are so many states, legislative assemblies and parliaments, but still the citizens are rogues and thieves. Good citizenship, therefore, cannot be enforced. The citizens must be trained. As there are schools and colleges to train students to become chemical engineers, lawyers, or specialists in many other departments of knowledge, there must be schools and colleges to train students to become brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, shudras, brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis. This will provide the preliminary condition for good citizenship, varnashrama gunanvitaha. Generally speaking, if the king or president is a rajarishi, the relationship between the citizens and the chief executive will be clear, and there will be no possibility of disruption in the state, because the number of thieves and rogues will decrease. In Kali Yuga, however, because the Varanashram system is neglected, people are generally thieves and rogues. In the system of democracy, such thieves and rogues naturally collect money from other thieves and rogues, and thus there is chaos in every government, and no one is happy. But here the example of good government is to be found in the reign of Lord Ramachandra. If people follow this example, there will be good government all over the world. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Gyanati Miranda Sri Gyan Arjuna Shlokaya Chakshunita Minita Smai Shri Guru Venama. So a very nice purport, extensive purport by Srila Prabhupada on this special role that Lord Ramachandra has now entered into. A couple of weeks ago we celebrated Dashera, the actual killing of the demon Ravana, and we burnt him as we do every year in great style. So sometimes people ask, who is this Ravana? Why do you keep burning him every year? Give him a break once in a while. But actually the devotees of the Lord take great pleasure in burning a demon like Ravana. Because actually if we happen to be on the side of the Lord, if we happen to please the Lord, if we serve the Lord and we attract the Lord's favor, then actually we enter into his famous book. We enter into a book where our behavior is glorified amongst advanced persons. Life after life even, not just year after year. Whereas if we go against the Lord, if we act against his interests, if we act against the systems he has set up, if we try to destroy or disrupt his plan in the world, then we enter into his book of infamy. And as a result of that infamy, people remember that and practice that and commemorate it year after year. So just imagine how unfortunate someone like Ravana is, that their deeds are recounted as crimes. In this country, obviously, we have the equivalent, Guy Fawkes. He tried to blow up the parliament, the Houses of Parliament, all those years ago. And so that is commemorated. It's a very visible reminder that someone who attempts to destroy the state will be honored in this way. So following this festival of Dashera, of course, then there is a whole episode where Lord Ram is establishing what to do with Lanka. Vibhishan is there, and Vibhishan has obviously been the person who surrendered to Lord Ram very, very early. He came to Lord Ram when none of the other demon armies led by Ravana were interested. And even initially when Vibhishan came to the camp of Lord Ram, he wasn't immediately accepted by others because they thought, what is he up to? You have the enemy soldier coming right in the midst of your soldiers, your camp, where you are vulnerable. He must be a spy. And so they didn't initially give him entrance. But then obviously Lord Ram was consulted on the matter, and he said, this person wants to surrender. And it's at this point that he made this promise that if anyone surrenders to me, if anyone takes shelter of me, I will give them my protection forever. If we take shelter of the Lord, if we surrender to him, we are assured of the Lord's protection under any and all circumstances. And just reading the Ramayana, we understand the circumstances that everyone had to go through. No one actually had an easy time during the Ramayana. All those soldiers who fought for Lord Ram, they suffered tremendously. So many monkey warriors were killed. Sita suffered constantly during that entire absence. The whole kingdom of Ayodhya was practically at a standstill. It had just been suspended practically. All normal life, normal activities. Everyone was lamenting. Lord Ramachandra was hardly joyful himself. Lakshman took such strict austerities, strict vows not to have any kind of enjoyment or pleasure while Lord Ram was in this predicament. And this is the natural feeling that a person has towards their Lord and Master. The citizens in the state of Ayodhya did not want any satisfaction that the Lord himself was not having. Mother Sita obviously wasn't enjoying herself while she was kidnapped and held prisoner in the horrible place by Ravana. Although the other queens of Ravana tried to help her, tried to make her somewhat comfortable in that situation, she was practically starving. She was very thin when Lord Ram finally met her. And so many others, Jatayu and others, gave their lives. Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda ki. Sri Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki. And all these persons are commemorated forever. They're commemorated and honored as dear servants of Lord Ram. Today we can see on the altar there's a beautiful display. And I don't know if it's so clear, but you'll notice for the first time, just at the bottom there, there are four new deities. Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman. Four deities. These are South Indian style deities. And they've actually been at the manor for many years. But this is their first outing. So with all the Diwali festivities, with the wonderful light arrangements, hopefully we can hope that Lord Ram has a wonderful, enjoyable celebration today. Now today, of course, as Diwali is celebrated by many people with varying intentions, with multiple different ideas. And this whole period, obviously the five-day period, this was discussed by Kripamoy Prabhu in his class on our Sunday festival, the Sunday Diwali festival. And he explained how each one of these days represents something and is in commemoration of a particular event or a particular pastime. So today is this actual event of Diwali when Lord Ram returns to Ayodhya. And so I think it's fitting that we read something about his journey back. Over the last few weeks we've been hearing about his escapades in the forest and his killing of Ravana finally, and then installing Vibhishan. So there's a series of verses which I'll read, which is the immediate aftermath of the battle. And that hopefully in the Bhagavatam gives us a nice a nice meditation on actually Lord Ram's journey back to his kingdom. So I'm reading from text 30 if anyone wants to follow, but it's not necessary. If you just hear, that's sufficient. Thereafter, Lord Ramachandra found Sita Devi sitting in a small cottage beneath the tree named Shimshapa in the forest of Ashoka trees. She was lean and thin, being aggrieved because of separation from him. Seeing his wife in that condition, Lord Ramachandra was very compassionate. When Ramachandra came before her, she was exceedingly happy to see her beloved, and her lotus-like mouth showed her joy. After giving Vibhishan the power to rule the Rakshasa population of Lanka for the duration of one kalpa, Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Bhagavan, placed Sita Devi on an aeroplane decorated with flowers and then got on the plane himself. The period for his living in the forest having ended, the Lord returned to Ayodhya, accompanied by Hanuman, Sugriva, and his brother Lakshman. When Lord Ramachandra returned to his capital Ayodhya, he was greeted on the road by the princely order, who showered his body with beautiful fragrant flowers, while great personalities like Lord Brahma and other demigods glorified the activities of the Lord in great jubilation. Upon reaching Ayodhya, Lord Ramachandra heard that in his absence, his brother Bharat was eating barley cooked in the urine of a cow, covering his body with the bark of trees, wearing matted locks of hair, and lying on a mattress of kusha. The most merciful Lord very much lamented this. When Lord Bharat understood that Lord Ramachandra was returning to the capital Ayodhya, he immediately took upon his own head Lord Ramachandra's wooden shoes and came out from his camp at Nandigram. Lord Bharat was accompanied by ministers, priests, and other respectable citizens, by professional musicians vibrating pleasing musical sounds, and by learned brahmanas loudly chanting Vedic hymns. Following in the procession were chariots drawn by beautiful horses with harnesses of golden rope. These chariots were decorated by flags with golden embroidery and by other flags of various sizes and patterns. There were soldiers bedecked with golden armor, servants bearing betel nut, and many well-known and beautiful prostitutes. Many servants followed on foot, bearing an umbrella, whisks, different grades of precious jewels, and other paraphernalia befitting a royal reception. Accompanied in this way, Lord Bharat, his heart softened in ecstasy and his eyes full of tears, approached Lord Ramachandra and fell at his lotus feet with great ecstatic love. After offering the wooden shoes before Lord Ramachandra, Lord Bharat stood with folded hands, his eyes full of tears. And Lord Ramachandra bathed Bharat with tears while embracing him with both arms for a long time. Accompanied by Mother Sita and Lakshman, Lord Ramachandra then offered his respectful obeisances unto the learned brahmanas and the elderly persons in the family. And all the citizens of Ayodhya offered their respectful obeisances unto the Lord. The citizens of Ayodhya, upon seeing their king return after a long absence, offered him flower garlands, waved their upper cloths, and danced in great jubilation. O King, Lord Bharat carried Lord Ramachandra's wooden shoes, Sugriva and Vibhishan carried a whisk and an excellent fan, Hanuman carried a white umbrella, Shatrughna carried a bow and two quivers, and Sita Devi carried a water pot filled with water from the holy places. Angada carried a sword, and Jambavan, king of the rikshas, carried a golden shield. O King Parikshit, as the Lord sat on his aeroplane of flowers, with women offering him prayers and reciters chanting about his characteristics, he appeared like the moon with the stars and the planets. Thereafter, having been welcomed by his brother Bharat, Lord Ramachandra entered the city of Ayodhya in the midst of a festival. When he entered the palace, he offered obeisances to all the mothers, including Kaikeyi and the other wives of Maharaj Dashrath, and especially his own mother, Kaushalya. He also offered obeisances to his spiritual preceptors, such as Vashishta, friends of his own age, and young friends worshipped him, and he returned their respectful obeisances, as did Lakshman and Mother Sita. In this way, they all entered the palace. Upon seeing their sons, the mothers of Ram, Lakshman, Bharat and Shatrughna immediately arose, like unconscious bodies returning to consciousness. The mothers placed their sons on their laps and bathed them with tears, thus relieving themselves of the grief of long separation. The family priest or spiritual master Vashishta had Lord Ramachandra cleanly shaved, freeing him from his matted locks of hair. Then, with the cooperation of the elderly members of the family, he performed the bathing ceremony Abhishek for Lord Ramachandra with the water of the four seas and with the other substances, just as it was performed for King Indra. And finally, Lord Ramachandra, fully bathed and his head clean shaven, dressed himself very nicely and was decorated with a garland and ornaments. Thus he shone brightly, surrounded by his brothers and wife, who were similarly dressed and ornamented. And then that brings us to today's verse. Being pleased by the full surrender and submission of Lord Bharat, Lord Ramachandra then accepted the throne of the state. He cared for the citizens exactly like a father, and the citizens, being fully engaged in their occupational duties of varna and ashram, accepted him as their father. Srila Prabhupada ki. So this is obviously such a wonderful pastime. Just the Lord's welcome back to his home has so much meaning and is full of so many lessons. The meeting between Bharat, and you could say in one way, the place where the plane touched down, the airport, because they didn't quite fly straight into the helipad on top of Ayodhya Palace. This actually took place in a place called Nandigram, which was mentioned earlier on in these verses, which is about 20 kilometers just outside the central part of Ayodhya. And yes, it's a place we can still visit today. There is a place, Bharat Kund, which is there. There is a little temple where there is the imprint of Lord Ram's feet. And the sandals are placed upon a pedestal. And it is actually from this place that Bharat Maharaj, all the while eating only items such as barley soaked in cow urine, was actually ruling the kingdom of Ayodhya in Lord Ram's absence. We know the story that when Lord Ram was leaving, Bharat Maharaj wanted to go with him. He wanted to go, but Lord Ram said, "No, you must stay here. And on the one occasion, you must fulfill the wishes of your mother that she wanted you to rule, so you must do that. But you also have to give protection to the citizens." So Bharat obviously wasn't going to really have much of this, and he took the sandals of Lord Ram, gave them to Lord Ram, and asked him to put them on. After they had been sanctified in this manner, Bharat Maharaj took these sandals and had them installed on the throne of Lord Ram. And he said that until you return after 14 years of exile, these sandals will actually be ruling the empire, and I will simply be their servant. So Bharat Maharaj then removed himself and stayed in Nandigram, where he performed tremendous austerities. He did not want any of the comforts, any of the kingly comforts, any of the advantages, any of the assets, any of the enjoyment that Lord Ram was deprived of. So he stayed there in great austerity. Every day his ministers would come, they would discuss the affairs of the state, and he would dispatch different instructions to be followed. So it was really all being run as a means of proxy in one sense. You have a king who is acting as the servant. And really, this is how things are meant to be in one sense. By Bharat Maharaj's actual example, we understand that only the Supreme Lord can actually rule. The Supreme Lord is the only actual ruler of people everywhere. And anyone else who acts and takes on board that capacity does so as their servant. So Bharat really demonstrated this practically. But for others, for rulers, for those in leadership positions in government, they are supposed to act on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this purport, and it's a fairly hard-hitting and comprehensive purport by Prabhupada, there is a great deal of expectation discussed. Expectation of the citizens. Expectation of those in government. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that when the citizens are not trained, when they do not know actually what the correct thing to do is, if society has not been organized in what is considered advanced categorizations of varna and ashram, then actually it is no better than a society of hogs, dogs, camels and asses. Ironically, we are in a situation where almost the exact opposite to this is glorified and portrayed as advanced system of government. In today's day and age, people consider the highest evolution of society and of government is when everyone becomes totally equal. And that is the agenda of many, many political parties right across the world in practically every country. There is always this sort of conservative aspect, which is about hierarchy, position, capital growth, etc. And then there is the liberal aspect, where everyone is the same. Everyone is treated equally. Everyone has the same luxuries, the same rights, the same responsibilities. And so you have these two camps everywhere. So the highest point in the way we can see that governments and democracies and systems of law and order have been trending is towards establishing a situation where everyone is on an identical platform. But that is not remotely glorified by any reasonable or any advanced practitioner in an advanced government. Rather, the high point of government, and this instruction has been given not just to Lord Ram. I mean, of course, Lord Ram doesn't need to receive instructions, but he will take so many instructions from his advisors. These instructions were given to so many other great kings, Yudhishthira Maharaj. Practically the most important instruction that Bhishma Dev gave him when he was lying on the bed of arrows was that you should organize society in accordance with varna and ashram. Ensure that everyone is engaged properly according to their natures. Make sure that they are all coherently functioning and give them all protection. In Prithu Maharaj's case, some words of advice were given to him. When obviously he conducted many sacrifices, Indra tried to thwart his attempts. After the 99th Ashwamedha Yajna, Indra came, stole the sacrificial horse. Then Lord Vishnu himself appeared from the sacrificial fire and said, you don't need to compete with Indra. Let Indra have the material glory. Let him have his kingship. But for you, the only job expected of you is to rule the citizens and give them protection. That is what will please me. If you rule the citizens, give them protection, and take care of them exactly as a father takes care of a son, then the citizens will love you. And then there will be peace and prosperity in the kingdom. And that is very much echoed in today's purport here. We're mentioning these personalities, Yudhishthir Maharaj, Prithu Maharaj, Lord Ramachandra, because they are ideal rulers. They actually come with shakti to rule in a God-conscious way. There are many rulers in the world, but not all God-conscious. So the occupation of a position of power is not to be seen as an actual position of fulfilling the Lord's desire. These personalities we've mentioned, they were actual qualified persons. Parikshit Maharaj is another one. And they ruled, and because the citizens were completely happy in their kingdoms, they offered them great love and respect. And just as children, as it said here, the sons should be respectful to the father and the mother. And in return, the parents should protect them under all circumstances. So that notion of loving reciprocation is very much missing. We've substituted actual dealings, personal dealings, with a system of law and order. Law and order is there, of course, and has to be there as a subservient principle of running a state. But it is not the only principle. Now, rather than having the spiritual authority of Lord Krishna as the guiding force for society, we have an entire vault full of laws. Laws which are created by whoever happens to be in government and then stored, hundreds and thousands of them. No one can even remember what's written on most of them. That's why you need expert teams of lawyers who make it a career to actually extract and relay to people what the actual law is. So in one sense, it's very interesting that the society we are operating in is based upon specific laws. But you would think that in order for us to fulfill our purpose in that society, we would at least need to know what the laws are. But they are so convoluted, so complex, so difficult, that you need a law degree to understand them. And that's not an understatement, that's an actual fact. So what chance does the average citizen have of actually conducting themselves in a way that they will always be in accordance with the law? There's every opportunity for someone to make a mistake because they don't even know what it is. Whereas actually, when the law is simply to make advancement back to Godhead, to serve the Supreme Lord, to serve others in the kingdom with love and respect, all linking all our efforts back to the satisfaction and the pleasure of the Lord, samsiddhir haritoshanam, that is a very simple law to follow. Now that is completely missing with the increasing separation of church and state, as we call it. This is a trend not just in this country, in countries around the world. Initially, of course, the purpose of this was to allow different religions, different practices to coexist harmoniously, so that no one faith could act as the dominant faith and suppress others. That was the actual fairly glorious purpose behind this creation. But what's actually happened is that the atheistic agenda has crept in, increased, expanded, to the extent now where the mention of God in any laws is practically forbidden. It's practically illegal to have a law which includes God. And that's not really progress. For those who are actually seeking the type of wonderful wonderful kingdom exemplified by a person like Lord Ram, this is not music to the ears. We would like that the government creates a situation where every one of the citizens is encouraged to progress, not just materially, not just spending their time on temporary items which will be gone, not just gone at the end of this life, gone within 5-10 years mainly, but to encourage the citizens to actually practice spiritual life so that they make advancement and ultimately please Lord Ram. So it is very nice that in different governments, at least during this period, different celebrations for Diwali will take place. Every year there is a celebration in 10 Downing Street or in Parliament, and this is very nice. So we do certainly in the UK have a lot to be thankful for, that we actually have a facility where different people can have their genuine faiths honored and supported. And that is a very nice example. These aspects of serving the Lord, first of all, actually have to be practiced by the citizens. Now, we focus to some extent on the leaders, but the citizens also have to be suitably qualified and competent. Sometimes we wonder, I would like for this Ram Raj to appear. And Prabhupada says sometimes politicians even form a party called Ram Rajya, but unfortunately they have no obedience to Lord Ram. So the first thing that we can do before we demand that our leaders and our rulers and the kings and the emperors are carrying out their activities in the footsteps of Lord Ram is to first of all be qualified as the citizens of Ayodhya. Let's look at our own behavior. Let's look at our own dealings. Let's look at the way that we as citizens of the state approach our rulers. Do we treat them with love and respect? Do we value their contribution under always difficult circumstances? Or are we looking at every moment to constantly pull them down? I mean, we just have to look at the way governments are run. A lot of squabbling. Laws, actions, directives, all done on the basis of tremendous squabbling between the different parties in the kingdom or in the state. Everyone is constantly fighting just to get a single law introduced. Do we participate in that process of squabbling? Is that actually the culture we want, where anyone takes on board some responsible position and we're constantly trying to dethrone them? This is the duty of the citizens. By and large, citizens in a state would act in their varana and ashram. They have their duties to perform. They have their obligations. They have their services. They're not so much considering, what is this person here doing? What is that person there doing? Their focus is, I have my duty. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the assessment that will be made is whether I fulfilled my duty in the eyes of the Lord. Not whether this person did this, or she behaved in this way, or he behaved in this way. In Ayodhya, there was so much opportunity to do this. We know the whole role that was played by Kaikeyi, Mantara, so many others. But Lord Ram had completely forgiven them all. When he eventually met his mothers, all of them, it was as if life had come back to their lives. They were suspended animation in one sense. They could literally do nothing. During this period, Lord Ram's father had passed away as well, out of separation for his son. And the queens had remained just in order to welcome that day when Lord Ram would come back. There was so much reason for the citizens to think, oh, our situation is so troublesome. Let's just get on with life. Let's just carry on. Rather, they accepted that the person most dear to them is suffering. So they simply carried on their duties with great lamentation. And it is said in many ways the actual life in that city had ground to a halt. The fires had stopped burning, the fires of the brahmanas. Because there was no motivation. The Supreme Lord had left. What is there to do? Even if everyone performed all their activities perfectly, what is the purpose? Just activity without goal. This samsiddhir haritoshanam is such an important aspect that without the satisfaction of the Lord, any activities we do, any projects we carry out, any propaganda we create, it simply does not achieve its destination, its purpose. We simply end up with shrama eva hi kevalam. We simply end up with endeavors performed perfectly, but without any end goal. So all the citizens of Ayodhya, when they heard Lord Ram was coming, they came to this place, Nandigram. There Lord Ram greeted them all. Bharat Maharaj was there. He called for the slippers to be brought to Nandigram, as we read. Lord Ram placed them on his feet. But initially, and this gives us an insight into Lord Ram's actual thinking, Lord Ram, of course, displayed complete detachment from any type of power and control. Lord Ram's position is that he is the Supreme Lord, without question, without having a need to portray himself, without having a need to canvass, without having a need to conduct any propaganda. His actual inherent position is that he is the Lord, not just of the kingdom, but of the entire universe. Yet as soon as he was told he has to leave, immediately he put aside his royal dress, put on tree bark, and was ready to go. That is the Lord's quality. Now before he came back to resume the throne, he did two things. The kingdom of Lanka was his by right. Yes, he had conquered Lanka with the help of the monkey soldiers. The natural course of action would be for Lord Ram to take charge of this city of gold, the city of Lanka, which had so much gold it's inconceivable to us. And he would be there to enjoy all the opulence. But no, Lord Ram said, I haven't come here to obtain this island of gold. I came here for one purpose only, to rescue Mother Sita. And so he placed Vibhishan in charge. And he gave him this benediction that he could rule for one kalpa. So not only did he give Vibhishan this charge of ruling this kingdom, but he also gave him the potency to do so. And that is very important. Because sometimes you may have a king, but they don't have the potency of the Lord behind them. Duryodhan was a king, after all. He was a king. There have been so many kings. The constant battle between the demigods and the demons takes place. In some cases, the Lord is on their side. In other cases, he isn't. So when you have someone like that, Ravana, Duryodhan, Kamsa, they act, but they don't act with the blessings of the Lord. So devotees always know how to distinguish power from genuine empowerment. When someone is empowered like Vibhishan was, there is no threat to that person's rulership. That is guaranteed. When Lord Brahma installed Swayambhuva Manu as the original father of mankind, you can understand that there is no competition there. It is ordained. It is empowered. And this coronation of Lord Ram is happening in a similar manner. It was said to be as extravagant as that original coronation performed by Lord Brahma to Manu, the father of mankind. So that is the first thing, that Lord Ram handed back Lanka immediately. He did not keep it. Then the second thing is, while he was just on the way back to Nandigram and Ayodhya, he stayed at the house of Bharadwaj Rishi, I believe. And there Hanuman was dispatched to Ayodhya. And he was dispatched to have a conversation with Bharat Maharaj, and to inform Bharat that Lord Ram was on his way back. And his job was to study Bharat Maharaj's features, his words and his behavior very carefully, very closely. Lord Ram wanted to know if Bharat had even the slightest attachment for that role. He wanted to know if he had even the slightest attachment to carrying on as the king. This would undoubtedly show in his features. And so Hanuman was there. He met Bharat and he informed him. And obviously we can imagine, knowing something about Bharat's character, that he was in ecstasy. He immediately gave, through all the signs of his body, a clear indication to Hanuman that I am so happy Lord Ram is coming back. So Lord Ram, again, had said that I will not take up this throne if Bharat Maharaj wants to keep it. If he wants to keep it, then I will simply be there as an assistant. That is the nature of an actual ruler, that they want the best person to rule. So these are two occasions where actually the inner mood of Lord Ramachandra comes out. And in order for us to understand and appreciate Lord Ram's contribution as the actual ruler, we also have to understand his complete disinterest in name, fame, and power. These are all very powerful lessons for us to apply in our own lives, and for rulers to also imbibe in their own. When Bharat received the blessings of Lord Ram, he then carried him on a wonderful chariot to the Ayodhya palace, where this coronation took place. And it's interesting that Lord Ram had lots of matted hair. Ram and Lakshman, 14 years of matted hair is quite a lot of hair. And that was all shaved off on the request of Vasishtha Muni, because this was required for the coronation. Now what's interesting is this is almost the reverse pastime that Lord Chaitanya performed. Lord Ram, when he accepted that throne of opulence, responsibility, the actual entrance into what you could say is householder life from the life of a renunciate in the forest, Lord Ram underwent a haircut. Lord Chaitanya, when he took up sannyas, he also had to have his hair cut. And there's this place, Katwa, where this happened, this pastime. Now, obviously, they say there's still some hair there left of Lord Chaitanya's. I don't know, some devotees may have been there, but they have a little bit of Lord Chaitanya's hair. Well, on that occasion, the barber who shaved up Lord Chaitanya was weeping tears. Because obviously Lord Chaitanya's hair was wonderful, luxurious. It was the opulence of the Supreme Lord. And no one was particularly happy about it. Certainly not his mother. As soon as she heard Lord Chaitanya was going to take sannyas, she was lamenting. But it's interesting that this haircutting ceremony features in both cases, but with opposite results. So here Lord Ramachandra is shaved. He's prepared very nicely. Mother Sita, it's described, her hair was also full of jata, matted, after years of completely neglecting it. After all, why would she take care of herself? She had no interest other than the welfare of the Lord. So she had become thin, not very well dressed, with matted hair. And it said that all the other queens then unpicked all those knots. So anyway, they were both restored, Lakshman also, back to their normal beauty and opulence and strength. And then this wonderful coronation ceremony takes place. Hanuman was given a task that by tomorrow this coronation ceremony has to happen. Tomorrow is the scheduled date according to the advice of the sages. But by the time this ceremony happens, we need waters from all the sacred rivers, kuns, and places in the entire world. So, obviously only Hanuman and his soldiers could deal with this task. So they were dispatched overnight. They traveled to all sorts of places. It's described Hanuman went to the North Pole, the Arctic Ocean, collected some water from there. And they brought it all back in these golden pitchers. And this was all used, along with an abundance of other paraphernalia. In the descriptions, we know how the different demigods supplied different items to the Lord. Lord Indra gives a valuable necklace. So many others provide different items. And in this way, the Lord is coronated. And he then rules over the citizens. Now, this is all happening in a very visible way. Lord Ram is very visibly there as the leader, the ruler, and there is Ram Raj. But in parallel, there is something else going on. And that is the welcoming of Lord Ram into people's hearts, into their consciousness. And that is especially important for us. All these subtle aspects of behavior that I've mentioned about the way Bharat Maharaj conducted himself, the way Mother Sita conducted herself, the way the queens conducted themselves, Dashrath Maharaj who left his body out of separation from Lord Ram, they reveal actually what the inner consciousness is of devotees and dear servants of the Lord from whom the Lord is absent. In the Lord's absence, they shrivel up. And this process of Diwali, this process of welcoming the Lord back to Ayodhya, is for us, in a very practical sense, is an obligation to create the mood of Ayodhya in our hearts. This is actually the real meaning of Diwali. We will welcome him physically with candles. We will guide the Pushpak Viman down. We will do that. We will welcome back, especially today, the role of Lakshmi will be very much celebrated by the business community. But actually, Lakshmi remains where the Lord is. And Mother Sita remained separate from the Lord for all those years. And the citizens were not happy. Lord Ram certainly couldn't enjoy any of the opulence of the Goddess of Fortune without Lord Ram being there. And this is an important lesson, that the actual facility, the actual opulence of the Goddess of Fortune cannot be obtained by kidnapping her away from Lord Ram. Rather, if one thing comes out in this pastime, it's that the attempt to kidnap the Goddess of Fortune from the Supreme Lord leads to our destruction. Complete destruction. Lord Ravana had everything in that kingdom. But as his wife said, and as was said to Kamsa, he went one step too far. He tried to take something that was never his, that was actually the Lord's. So this aspect of welcoming the Lord into our hearts should actually be the focus on this day of Diwali. Where the Lord is, that is naturally where Mother Sita comes. Where Narayan is, that is naturally where Lakshmi Devi will come. On her own, she's very chanchala, never stays in one place. But where the Lord is, that is where she will come. Because she sees as the highest occupation of hers the chance to render service to the Lord's lotus feet. So these are some lessons for us, some meditations that we can focus on as we go about this day of Diwali. So many celebrations will be taking place with fireworks, with lamps, with lights. Prabhupada also said we should have nice celebrations for Diwali in the temples. We should light many candles. We should discuss the katha of the Lord. We have here, we are especially fortunate, one of the very few temples in ISKCON where we have actual deities of Lord Ram installed. Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman. Prabhupada wanted two specific places he mentioned, Juhu and the manor. He wanted Sitaram installed. So we are very fortunate, because this is extremely rare, that they are here according to the wish of Srila Prabhupada. Obviously they were installed later in 1982, but they are here. So we have the chance to offer our respects, offer our sincere prayer to Lord Ram, to invite him into our heart, to help, to request him to create this mood of Ayodhya in our heart, and to try to conduct ourselves for the coming year. From tomorrow, many people, Govardhan Puja is the festival that we'll observe tomorrow, Gopuja. For many, it is the start of a new year also. We're lucky we have a new year about 3 or 4 times a year in our in our tradition. Gaur Purnim, Janmashtami, sometimes Ram Navami, Dashera, and maybe the normal new year as well. So we have a chance to make some vows again, to try and plan out the next year, hopefully in Ram Rajya. We pray to the Lord, enter our hearts, let's have a new beginning. and let me remain your faithful servant for the rest of this year. So I'll stop there. See if anyone has any questions, comments. If you'd like to add something to this wonderful pastime of Lord Ram's.